G'day, it's Phil Edwards, Vision CEO here, with a quick invitation to become part of this amazing beacon of hope called Vision. Together we can put our love into action to help people of all kinds build or rebuild their lives on the truth of God. Please consider the part you can play during our upcoming Visionathon appeal, remembering that it's your support that makes Vision possible, including this podcast.
Life, culture, and current events from a biblical perspective. 2020 with Neil Johnson on Vision.
On a Thursday, we like to check in with Family Voice Australia, and State Director for the State of Queensland, Andrew McColl, is back with us. Andrew, a special welcome back to 2020.
Thank you, Neil. It's nice to be with you and be with our listeners today. Thank you.
Andrew, you've been reflecting on the Christmas story from Matthew chapter 2, Luke chapter 2. So it's easy to remember just the chapter 2, but Matthew and Luke. But the twist centered around the context of the Christmas narrative and the godly family. And some of those principles you're speaking into actually are very relevant for us in our present day.
Well, they are, Neil, because we commonly read, as you're just saying quite correctly, from Matthew 2 and Luke 2 for church services. And, of course, we've got 10 days till Christmas, and there'll be lots of us who are in church on that Sunday morning or afternoon, evening, whatever it might be, wherever in the world, and there'll be a minister reading from these chapters. And the reading from Matthew 2 in chapter 2, verse 12, finishes with, "And having been warned by God in a dream not to return to Herod, the Magi left for their own country by another way." And that's commonly where many preachers stop. But if they go on, and I'll read from verse 13 of Matthew 2 down to 18. "Now, when they had gone, behold, an angel of the Lord appeared to Joseph in a dream and said, 'Get up. Take the child and his mother and flee to Egypt and remain there until I tell you, for Herod is going to search for the child to destroy him.' So Joseph got up and took the child and his mother while it was still night and left for Egypt. He remained there until the death of Herod. This was to fulfill what had been spoken by the Lord through the prophet, 'Out of Egypt I called my son.' Then, when Herod saw that he had been tricked by the Magi, he became very enraged and sent and slew all the male children who were in Bethlehem and all its vicinity, from 2 years old and under, according to the time which he had determined from the Magi. Then what had been spoken through Jeremiah the prophet was fulfilled. A voice was heard in Ramah, weeping and great mourning, Rachel weeping for her children, and she refused to be comforted because they were no more." So we have this passage right at the end of what is commonly called the Christians or the Christmas story, and it's highly instructive for us today as people, generally speaking, who are part of a godly family. And let's face it, the godly family has had its challenges from government ever since Pharaoh wanted Sarai, but God struck his household with plagues.
We'll come back to some of those Old Testament connections in just a few moments. So for listeners here, we're talking about, yes, and some might be thinking, I've not even heard this before. Because sometimes, as you say, when you're in that Christmas service, the pastor or the priest might stop short of talking about some of the issues that were going on behind the scenes. So we know that Herod was enraged when he heard that there was a king that might be a challenge to him, and in sending out the order to kill all the babies under the age of two, the angel appears to Joseph and says, "Take Jesus, the baby or the child, and Mary, and flee to Egypt." So they had fled to Egypt. In other words, refugees from the town that they were living in. So when we talk about the politics behind the scene, this is not something unusual that there might be political challenges. And so you were beginning to just share some Old Testament references there. Take us back to some of those Old Testament references conferences where the political challenges against the people of God have been really, really big.
Well, they have been, and they started back in Genesis when Pharaoh wanted Sarah, or Sarai, as some of us would say, but God struck his household with plagues. This is Genesis 12:17. And now, and then we read on just a bit longer, a bit later in Genesis 20, we have a similar problem with God miraculously working on the part of Abraham again, so that he closed fast all the wombs of the household of Abimelech because of Sarah, Abraham's wife. So we have these kind of dark stories, really, which are not what you'd call inspirational. They're kind of a little bit scary because here's this innocent couple and they're moving around the countryside, and Abraham says to his wife, well, sweetheart, we're going to go down here, but I'm not sure how you're going to get treated. So I don't want you to kind of spill the beans that you're my wife. I want you to keep that under wraps because, well, actually, you are my half-sister. So they keep the fact of their marriage quiet, and Pharaoh decides that he wants her. Okay, well, that's looking a bit dodgy, because obviously he was a bit unsure of how Pharaoh would treat him. So we find this kind of fairly rigorous approach, that, and Abraham's a bit concerned about this, so he decides to play a dead bat to this and keeps it quiet. So, but having done that, God works on his behalf, sends plagues against Pharaoh, and then the next fellow, they're called Abimelech, wasn't quite as nasty as Pharaoh was threatening to be, but he's kind of closed up all the wombs of that fellow's household. So we see, this is looking a bit not the sort of most inspirational piece of conversation to have on a Thursday morning, Neil, but we've got to sort of figure out some of these things. So we try and get a bit of backstory on these individuals, just as there's a backstory to the Christmas story as well.
Okay, the backstory here, and let's not sugarcoat this in any way, because oftentimes the Christmas story is sugarcoated. The unsugarcoated story is that it was a very dangerous time in Israel at the time when Jesus the Messiah was born. And it's not unprecedented, because there are lots of times throughout the history of the Old Testament where it was a very dangerous time in those pivotal points in the history of Israel. But God has miraculously worked things through. Take us into some more of these stories, Andrew.
Well, once we go back to the first chapter of Exodus, we find that Pharaoh wants to kill all the Hebrew baby boys. He's concerned about the Hebrews are having lots and lots of children. So their population expanding. And he looks at this in a very insecure manner and says, well, if these people keep breeding, I'm going to get outnumbered. This could be dangerous. So he decides to instruct all the midwives to throw all the baby boys into the Nile. Now, fortunately, those ladies, the Bible plainly tells us they feared the Lord and they wouldn't do it. But what do we have here? A simply a pattern to kill these Hebrew baby boys from Pharaoh. Then we come to Moses' time. Pharaoh wants to kill Moses. Who wanted to kill David? Well, Saul, Israel's king. Who hated Elijah and sought to kill him? Ahab and Jezebel. Who murdered John the Baptist? Whoops, well, that was Herod. Neil, do you think there's a bit of a pattern kind of showing itself here?
The pattern is obvious, isn't it? That at these pivotal times in history, where you've got authoritarian dictatorships in charge, that the people of God face some very dangerous circumstances. And what we're also mindful, no doubt, and where we do want to draw attention to is the deliverance of God in those circumstances, because the Lord's people have been preserved in moments of extreme danger because God has intervened in significant ways.
Well, that is also very true. And what we know, too, is that we have to be sort of learning from these experiences of history, which are faithfully recorded in Scripture, because we have to be mindful of what evil governments have done and what they can do to God's people if they have an opportunity.
So let's bring this into the current context that we have today, because it's all very well to recount, even as you're saying here, Andrew, some of the dark stories, the dark background that was there in the backdrop in the first century, the birth of Jesus. But how do we actually translate that into our current day? What sort of principles can we glean from an understanding of what happened then to what we might anticipate today?
Well, what we can do, Neil, and our listeners, is consider our last 3 years in Australia. And we've encountered some political manipulation. Go and get vaccinated for the sake of the community. Oh, I see. We've encountered double standards from political leaders, such as the former New South Wales Premier, essentially saying, all you people go and get a mask to put on in public, but I don't have to wear one. Oh, okay. Thanks for that that lesson in leadership from the Premier down there. We've encountered political coercion on a huge scale. No jab, no job. And too bad if you're healthy. And so we have these state governments assuming astonishing powers over innocent people, compelling them to do things that they didn't want to do simply because there's been some COVID illness in the community. Yes, there was some, but it's a flu. Okay, it's a flu. And we have flu all the time in Australia, and most commonly we will lose 2,000 or 3,000 people to flu every year, over 25 million people. But we've had all sorts of things going on there in these years. We've encountered information suppression. We've encountered the Queensland chief medical officer, now the Queensland governor, who refused to advocate the use of ivermectin or hydroxychloroquine, let alone vitamin C or D, when there was abundant evidence that these could all assist COVID patients. So now we've got some unanswered questions, and in my opinion, we need a Royal Commission.
And that's not the only dimension, but we'll come back to the need for a Royal Commission, but it's not the only dimension, is it? You've just described a whole lot of things where we have begun to recognise what authoritarian governments can do on a national scale. And it's not just around the COVID issue. There's all sorts of things happening around sex and gender and conversion therapies and all sorts of things like that that are, in fact, criminalising Christians. But come back to the COVID issue here, because when you say we need a Royal Commission, what are your thoughts around the real necessity for that?
Well, we have to ask ourselves a question. Has there been corruption with COVID? I mean, who profits from vaccines being mandated? Well, frankly, drug companies do profit because they get large proportions of people, and we're talking about hundreds of millions of people worldwide who will now need a vaccine if it's going to be mandated for those countries. So it's very appealing, Neil, for a drug company to get a massive contract that will apply to tens of millions of people at so many dollars per shot. Hey, that's going to be very appealing financially. And we have to ask ourselves, well, how does all this, what do I mean, Andrew, in terms of corruption? Well, there's been one doctor who works for, or has been working for the US government, by the name of Mr. Dr. Tony Fauci. And Dr. Fauci has been responsible for some of these issues and for which companies get contracts. So he's just finished his employment, or he's finishing it almost, I think, this month. And people have asked him, oh, Tony, you gave this piece of advice here and you gave this piece of advice then. And this is a man who's been on around about $400,000 US a year, and when they've asked him some of these fairly leading questions, he seems to have difficulty recalling those matters. It seems to be something that's just gone from his memory. So, okay, well, we all have memory problems from time to time, but Then we have an Australian PM who decides to indemnify drug companies that were producing vaccines. Well, why would our PM do that? And why would that same PM give tax breaks to certain media outlets that published material that suited his narrative? And is it possible that someone's got an agenda that they're actually wanting to dump on us here in Australia?
Well, those sorts of things, when you raise them, they certainly are concerns. And, you know, put them all together in just a short burst like you did brings back a lot of memories and a lot of hurt for a lot of individuals who might even be listening to our conversation today. So out of the Christmas story, the narrative from the first century, Herod and his slaughter of the innocents, the flight of Joseph and Mary and Jesus to Egypt and their eventual return. What are the sorts of things we could conclude about how we can, you know, cement some ideas from a biblical narrative about how we look at and how we have an expectation on God, even for his deliverance, through some of the challenging times that government brings to families and to Christian believers?
Well, fortunately, you know, there are these kind of parallels in history to things that happen today sometimes. And we have this case of this delightful little family turning up. What a circumstance. There's no midwife that we know of. We don't know whether it was a difficult birth. We don't know whether there was a comfortable place to sit down or lie down. We don't know anything about the birth other than the fact that Jesus was born. But what we do know is this. After the event, and after the wise men have all gone, God showed Joseph what to do, and Jesus and Mary, in the same way that he in earlier times protected Abraham and others from governments. And we can trust him to do the same with us. And so, drawing on that parallel, and especially the second part of the Gospel of Matthew chapter 2, we can enjoy the Christmas holidays, family times, the balloons, the gifts, while remembering to take note of the warnings of Matthew 2, because the godly family still has its predators and it still needs our protection.
Well, good insights and food for thought for listeners. And you might want to read the entirety of Matthew chapter 2 to refresh some of the detail that comes beyond what ordinarily is read in church on Christmas Day. So you can find that easily, Matthew chapter 2, the narrative also in Luke chapter 2. But always good insights, Andrew McColl. Andrew is the State Director for the State of Queensland for Family Voice Australia. And you can connect with Andrew through the Family Voice website, familyvoice.org.au. That's familyvoice.org.au. And Andrew, our last update for the year. Thanks so much for stepping into the breach and being a spokesperson for Family Voice Australia. You've brought some tremendous insight on a whole lot of different levels, and I want to appreciate you very much, and wishing you a happy and holy Christmas for you and your family.
Thank you, Neil. Nice talking to you once again.
Thanks for taking time to listen to this audio on demand from Vision Christian Media. To find out more about us, go to vision.org.au.